It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn leaves Atlanta today for Kazakhstan. And there, the co-founder and co-chair of the Nuclear Threat Initiative will dedicate facilities for something called the Low-Enriched Uranium Bank. The whole idea is to keep more countries from producing nuclear weapons. Now, many developing countries need low-enriched uranium for their nuclear electric power plants, and they can go out and buy that on the commercial market. But if they worry that their market supply of uranium could be cut off for whatever reason, they might start developing their own enrichment programs, and that could lead to developing bomb-grade uranium and nuclear weapons. So after a 12-year international effort with funding from several countries plus a $50 million donation from investor Warren Buffett, the Low-Enriched Uranium Bank will open. And in a conversation in his office earlier this week, Senator Nunn described it to me as an insurance policy against the spread of nuclear weapons.
When you develop an enrichment process, your neighbors are going to take notice. And it will frighten the whole area, as we see in North Korea, as we see in Iran. Those are two countries that are an example of what we don't want to happen in the future. If the marketplace is working and if there's this backup fuel supply internationally controlled, why are you spending these hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to go through an enrichment process when you can buy it on the market?
So it would be cheaper for them to do this?
A lot cheaper. And particularly that's true for countries that have a few reactors. And not a massive nuclear program, and that's the case in most instances.
Well, let's talk about the neighbors for a moment, because we've already seen this with India and Pakistan, for instance. If you are a country in a volatile neighborhood, and the idea of this sounds attractive to you, but you're nervous about your neighbors maybe continuing on a path to perhaps developing a bomb, wouldn't you still be tempted to go ahead and develop your own?
This is not going to solve all the problems. It's one tool in the arsenal. The Nonproliferation Treaty has worked fairly well, not perfectly, and there are a lot of loopholes in it. This is one of the loopholes where every country has a right to the technology for peaceful purposes. And because it's dual purpose, there's a real paradox here. And the challenge is where the gap is, and this is one tool to try to help fill that gap.
So where does this fuel come from?
It'll be purchased on the open marketplace. There is a market for low-enriched uranium and for converting that low-enriched uranium to actual fuel. So there is a marketplace out there, and it generally works. And so it's been an international effort, and it shows what can happen when countries work together. And this is an unusual kind of circumstance when countries come together like this, but it's got to be the pattern of the future, because the threats we face, not just nuclear, global warming and others, are all going to have to be addressed by cooperation between nations.
Why store all this in Kazakhstan? And is there enough of a security assurance to make sure that the stockpile stays where it is and stays under the control of the International Atomic Energy Agency?
This is a very good question, Dennis, and it's been checked out very carefully. First of all, Kazakhstan gave up their nuclear weapons. They were a country that had to perhaps third or fourth largest arsenal in the world when the Soviet Union broke up. They gave up every one of those weapons. Nazarbayev, the president of Kazakhstan, has been a leader in the nonproliferation. They also, and my organization, worked with them to get rid of their highly enriched uranium. They got rid of not only the weapons, but also the material that could make the weapons. And I think it's also, being a Muslim country, I think it sends a very powerful signal. And it's also important that the UAE and Kuwait both put in, I believe, about $10 million each, because they also are Muslim countries, and I think this is kind of an example we, I think, should build on.
Have you gotten buy-in on this from the Trump administration?
I think the Secretary of Energy, Perry, I believe he has made favorable comments about it. I haven't talked to him personally about it, but my partner, CEO now, Ernie Moniz of the Threat
Initiative. Former Energy Secretary in the Obama administration.
That's right. Ernie has talked to Secretary Perry several times, so I know they are fully aware of it. And we've had support from Democratic and Republican administrations. In fact, the George W. Bush administration was the one that put up the $50 million to match Buffett. Actually, $49 million. Buffett's still the biggest contributor. But that U.S. Donation was a I think, a wise investment. It came under Republican administration. So it's been supported on both sides of the aisle.
A couple of minutes left to talk about something very complicated and quite urgent, North Korea. The U.S. hit 10 companies from China and Russia with sanctions because it says they do business with North Korea in ways that would advance that country's growing nuclear capability. China immediately responded, very unhappy about that. Was this the right move for the U.S.?
I don't know the details of this particular set of sanctions and what those companies allegedly have done. But the bottom line is we've got to help enforce the U.N. resolutions. Those resolutions have been passed by the U.N. Security Council, voted favorably. China voted favorably. Russia voted favorably. So
that's
everybody.
One of the reasons China was upset was they said, look, we're abiding by those resolutions, and so now the U.S. is coming in with these sanctions on our companies.
Well, I think we've got to have quiet discussions with China if we want to solve the North Korea nuclear problem without a war. So I'm hoping that while we enforce the U.N. resolution with sanctions, we do it in a way that does not cut off meaningful communication with China, and that communication has got to be greatly increased.
You've said before in conversations with me that it's time to talk directly with North Korea itself. Given their actions in recent months, is that something you still think should
Yes. I think the rhetoric has gotten out of hand. I think sometimes the fear of preemption and the rhetoric can cause preemption, and it can cause a mistake where neither country wants a war. That has calmed down a bit. I hope it will continue to be calmer. I do think we ought to talk directly with North Korea, and I think we shouldn't have a lot of conditions, but it shouldn't be a negotiation. It should be a discussion about how we get to negotiation, because the negotiation has got to include South Korea, it's got to include Japan, it's got to include China, and also Russia. So it's going to take time. We're not going to see the North Koreans get rid of their nuclear weapons overnight. Hopefully we could find a way to negotiate a freeze. We're going to have to discuss with the North Koreans the peace treaty. They are almost paranoid about the fact we still are technically at war with an armistice. We've never had a peace treaty. They think that the sanctions are wrecking their own economy. In my view, it's their own rotten system. But nevertheless, we've got to put some things on the table, sticks, but also carrots.
Did the president's fire and fury comment specifically make things worse, not really in the long run have much effect on North Korea's development at all, or did it perhaps give them pause? I mean, there are three schools of thought on this.
Well, I suspect, North Koreans are already paranoid and xenophobic, so I'm not sure it added very much to that paranoia. But also, the thing you've got to watch in that kind of rhetoric is commanders out there in the field making a terrible mistake, given the environment and the atmosphere and the fact they fear that we're about to go to war. But the other thing we have to really watch is South Korea's an ally and Japan's an ally. And while we are warning the North Korea properly about what would happen with their actions, while we're doing that, we got to be careful we don't frighten the South Koreans and put the alliance in danger, because if we start seeing a huge amount of political dissent in South Korea, fearing the Americans are going to launch an attack, then you could have the alliance begin to slip apart, and that would be in itself an additional danger. The North could very well make misjudgments based on political dissent and appearance of splitting between the United States and South Korea.
Have you spoken to Secretary Mattis? And if you could speak to him or the president, what would you tell him?
Well, if they asked the questions you ask, I think I'd say exactly the same thing if I could remember it. I hope I can remember it.
Former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn. Senator, thanks as always for giving us this time. We really appreciate it. Good to see you.
Thank you, Dennis. Enjoyed it, always.